join me in a drink to celebrate our mutual dissatisfaction.
Vulcans don't drink. But this occasion merits an exception.
Transfer complete.
Hello and welcome to Subspace Transmissions, the podcast where two Trek fans step into the arena and tackle the best, worst, weirdest, wildest, and everything in between that happened in the year 2020. I'm Cam Smith, and joining me on the bridge,
this is Tyler Orton sharing his opinion about Star Trek Picard on Facebook, like any good Trek fan would.
That's right, and we're here this week to bid adieu to the year 2020. I think, Tyler, you'd agree, one of the greatest years that we've ever been alive.
Was this not the year that World War III started in Star Trek canon, Cam? I can believe it.
That might have been an upgrade.
Yeah, no kidding. Cam, we started the year with a lot of excitement, though. We were kicking it off with Star Trek Picard, written January. That's planned for us to do those weekly episode reviews. Well, despite the pandemic, it continued. Like, we don't record remotely usually. We've always recorded in person. We'd have guests come over to my little home studio, as I like to call my dinner table. And I say props to us for figuring it out, and props for the listeners for dealing with my really weird audio issues that I was having for about this first 6 months of this pandemic as we recorded remotely. But what a year to be a podcaster, sir.
No kidding. And yeah, in the past, we'd often been asked, you know, why don't you get guests to just, you know, Skype in or Zoom in or what have you? And we'd always been like, meh, we like the energy of the room. And it was interesting to see what happened when all of that was just ripped away from us.
Yes. Well, but look, let's reflect on 2020, what we got out of it. And then a little later on, we always have surprises for our listeners, and we'll be recapping our favorite moments throughout the year and just talking about what the year was in Star Trek in general. But I think the big news, though, is that we had, like, what, more than 30 episodes of Star Trek air in a single year, which is just absolutely insane to think about where we started with the podcast, in which the most we could hope for was a Kelvinverse movie sometime in the distant future. And now we're getting, like, 30 hours of Star Trek a year, which is great for a fan, I'd say.
Yeah, 30 hours plus some short treks thrown in there as well, home video releases. There was a lot of Star Trek going on, more than any time in my lifetime as a Star Trek fan, for sure. And it's almost led me to this new, like, outlook of, like, is it too much Star Trek? I'm beginning to wonder. I don't know. Maybe.
You're experiencing the oversaturation that people complained about in the 1990s.
Well, does it feel special when it never stops coming? That's the big question.
Are we spoiled as fans at this point of 2020?
Or is it just that, you know, the new Star Trek that we've gotten this year, it's been peaks and valleys.
It's been quantity, but how much of it has been quality, Cam?
Right. Like, when, you know, on the podcast, we talk so much about episodes, so memorable episodes of TNG, the original series, DS9, Voyager, etc. And I just wonder, you know, as we've been going week to week, how many of these episodes we're talking about, I don't know, 5 years from now, 10 years from now, like, how many of them feel like they're really going to stick? And that's something that I've been really battling with as we come to the close of Discovery Season 3.
Yeah, well, you know what? Maybe a bit of a spoiler for our listeners, but in the coming weeks and months to kick off, you know, 2021, we're going to do a Star Trek Picard rewatch. We're going to do a Star Trek Lower Decks rewatch, and we'll also, probably about 3-4 months from now, we'll do a Star Trek Discovery kind of season 3 in review as well. We'll go more in depth in kind of recounting how those seasons went. But I think we both agree, and it's not a surprise to listeners at this point, but we were bummed out by Star Trek Picard, but we were absolutely elated by Star Trek Lower Decks, and we're very, very disappointed by Star Trek Discovery. And so, as you say, Cam, a lot of peaks and valleys. And I just hope that's there will be more peaks going into 2021. Maybe 2020 and Star Trek kind of represents 2020 as a year itself.
Yeah, and I just want to thank all the listeners for sticking with us, because I know that there's probably people out there that get bummed when they tune in and we're here just kind of like crapping on an episode of Star Trek Discovery or Picard, because believe me, I do not want to. There are episodes of these shows where I sit there and I can feel my stomach sink as I'm watching, you know, the episode going, oh no, like this is not a very good episode. And this means now I've got to go on and talk about why I don't like it, because I'm not going to lie as well. And I don't want to come on and be pessimistic about episodes of Discovery or Picard. I want, you know, Star Trek to be as good as it can. Star Trek is the underdog. You know, we look to the, you know, the big ones, franchises out there, Marvel, Star Wars, they're on top of the world. Star Trek needs champions and it needs great content for people to be able to point to and say, hey, you guys should really be paying attention to Star Trek. And they're putting me in a position of not being able to do that right now, and it bums me out.
I feel, and you no doubt agree, though, that we've been proselytizing on behalf of Lower Decks, though. I think that one was a real winner out of those 30 episodes. Those at least a third of the episodes had a lot of very cool, enjoyable stuff. Picard had its moments, you know. It wasn't just all a complete dumpster fire. And I also, I don't want to come off as if my comments are very dismissive towards anybody that enjoyed Star Trek Picard or is currently enjoying Star Trek Discovery. If you like those shows, go for it. That it means it's for you. It's just, it's not for me. And I would also make the argument that I think our critiques of those respective series, they're not like the dumb critiques that people say, well, I don't like this episode because this character has a weird hairdo. It's not that sort of stuff. We dive into the storytelling elements and whether they work, not because they're kind of pushing our buttons for just being able to see Star Trek realized on television once more, but whether they are, you know, earnest storytelling adventures that actually make sense, in which the characters make sense and what unfolds on screen makes sense. And I think that's where we had a lot of issues.
And with both Picard and Discovery, there's a lot of episodes, more so in Discovery because Picard's only been one season, but we can look to and say they had it right. Like they were doing, this was working. So we can always look back at those episodes and say, this is why this one doesn't, because these past episodes did it right. Look at an episode like Nepenthe on Picard, which was one of my favorite hours of Star Trek this year of new content. And an episode I will cherish going forward and probably, you know, revisit. But when you surround it with some of the other episodes, I get very frustrated.
Yeah, I think Picard kind of sucked us in because I think Remembrance, the series premiere, it showed a lot of promise. And we were like, okay, we're down with this new vision of Star Trek. Let's go with it. Let's see where it takes us. And where it took us, it wasn't really a place that we particularly enjoyed, which is the disappointment. And this is where I have some conflicts about how we approach this, because the show that we liked the most is Star Trek Lower Decks, in which there was a lot of fan service. It took place very close to kind of the Berman era, you know, like that last Star Trek Next Generation movie. It took place right after Nemesis. It's a lot of familiarity. And I don't want to think that the only reason I like a Star Trek show is because it's familiar to me. And the reason I'm having issues with Discovery and Picard is because, oh, they're trying new things and I just don't want new things. I want the same old, same old. That's kind of my conflict. I honestly think that my critiques of Discovery and Picard are quite valid just based on what we've been talking about the last, you know, 1 year at this point.
Yeah, like you don't want to be the person that's just like, boy, this sure isn't as good as Enterprise or, you know, what have you, just naming off a series that's been off the air for a long time, because franchises are these living, breathing things that at a certain point just have their own life and are going to continue the way media is going now forever. And so they're always going to change and you want to be able to enjoy each iteration on its, you know, in its own way. But I think the thing that prevents me from feeling concerned about my take, say, on Discovery Season 3, and maybe that it does feel weird, is that, you know, I look at the 2009 Star Trek, which did not feel like any of the other Star Trek films that came before it, or like I could really say the original series or TNG or any of those shows. And it was a movie that just sucked me in and I totally loved the energy it was going for. Yeah, some of the science stuff's kind of dopey in it, but its, you know, alternate take on the characters was fantastic. It was creating a new version of Star Trek I could really get on board with. And that's something I hope, Discovery can get back to, because I think it's actually been on the right track. And it's something like Picard's so close. Like, the elements are there. The show doesn't feel rushed or chaotic. It doesn't feel really, you know, just kind of like a mess behind the scenes. It just feels like a show. I don't even know if it really knows what it is at this point. It feels kind of weird.
It feels like an amorphous blob of content that they're trying to string together in a way that screams, I am important, you better take me seriously. And I think they're at times way too precious with the source material. And at other times, they just want to, you know, go all rock stars if this ain't your daddy's Star Trek. And I found the show to be a mess on screen in how they realized it, despite some really cool moments strewn throughout.
And, you know, I do put a little bit of this on the writers and the producers who were hyping it in advance, too, talking about how Picard would be a contemplative Star Trek show. And I don't think that's an insane thing to expect from a show about Picard, one of the most contemplative characters in the history of the franchise. I think any of us who watch TNG, there's a lot of episodes about Picard, you know, giving philosophy or diplomatic talks with other alien races. Like, it could be a very serious, talky show. And I think we look to Picard to give us maybe a little bit more of a, you know, 10-episode adventure, but one that would bring the personality of Picard to that show in a big way. And I don't know that they quite merged the two. Like, it often felt like throwing Picard in an action show, which really didn't suit the character very well. And I mean, I think you could do that, but it didn't feel like they cracked it, especially when we got into things with, you know, Narek the Romulan and all this sort of stuff that just didn't really pay off in an interesting way.
Well, I think ultimately, look, they kept calling it a 10-episode movie. Like, we're making a 10-hour movie, which is something that makes me roll my eyes whenever people in television proclaim that that's what they're doing. But what happens if your 10-hour movie has a story that isn't very compelling, that you're not invested in, that's, you know, there's very little to grab onto and make you want to tune in to see what happens next? And what if there's just a lot of just unpleasantness going on throughout? And I think that's what we got with Star Trek Picard as well. And I think Discovery is kind of suffering from that in that this season, it's not telling a very compelling, serialized story. There's some cool moments so far in Discovery season 3, but the overall story, I don't even know what to make of it at this point. Cam, we are almost done Discovery season 3, and I don't even know what to tell you what the overarching kind of story is so far.
Yeah. It just feels like a lot of the quote-unquote story is trying to discover the source of the burn and repair the Federation, but that's not a story. Like, I don't really know if that, because when characters just keep talking about what is the burn, what caused the burn, that's not a story that's being told. That's just characters giving you information. And it's not like they said in, say, episode 3, for example, we figured out the source of the burn, we need to go, you know, whatever, resolve it. And then the rest of the season was about charting the course to do that. That would be a story. But yes, it feels kind of choppy and confused in a way that I wouldn't have expected for season 3 of a show, especially a show, like, I get it, going from, you know, more episodic storytelling on Star Trek to serialized, like fully serialized, was going to have some growing pains. And maybe in some ways we were a little tough on season 1 Discovery and not maybe acknowledging that that is a bit of a difficult transition for that franchise. But by season 3, I would hope they would have at least figured out the issues they'd had in the past and worked around them versus repeating them.
Well, these writers have all worked on serialized dramas before, so I don't know why this is such a confounding exercise. And I just wonder if there's just that issue of too many cooks in the kitchen, maybe too precious at times, much like Picard, and at other times not precious enough. And it's just kind of it's a weird little mixture that we've got cooked up here at this point. Cam, one of the other things that we've been keeping our eyeballs on is developments of another Star Trek feature film. And it appears we are no closer this year than we were when we did last year's Best Of episode, are we?
No, it doesn't feel like it. I guess with so much Star Trek content on the air and all these other shows, you know, in the works, it's almost like the movies just feel like they're just being ignored at this point. I don't know if that's a smart idea. I mean, I look at the slate coming up of Star Wars shows and Marvel TV shows, and it feels like early on we talked about how Star Trek really did have kind of the lay of the land to itself. There's a franchise in the streaming world getting to put out all this content while other franchises were trying to figure this stuff out. And now I'm in a point where I'm looking at Star Trek going like, ooh, guys, you got to figure this out because you've got serious competition coming up and they seem to be very well organized. And so the movies could really tie into that because I think the movies would be a way to hook people in because it's a 2-hour investment versus a 10-hour movie. But yeah. I don't understand why they aren't trying to get something out there that's attention grabbing, that makes people excited. You know, if you'd had a Kelvinverse TV show launch, you know, a handful of months or a year after that 2009 movie, you would have gotten eyeballs that wouldn't have existed if you just waited a decade, then put out a new Star Trek show like Discovery, you know, a handful of years later. So it makes sense to me to get some sort of Star Trek movie out there to draw people into this world and watch these shows that you want to occupy the same sort of territory as Mandalorians and, you know, WandaVisions and all that sort of stuff.
In all fairness to the regime running CBS Viacom right now, this merger is brand new. I think things are a little bit messy. There's not that continuity that you would hope for. But maybe when CBS All Access relaunches as Paramount Plus in what we expect to be the spring of 2021, there might be some news in that regard. Maybe they want to pull a Warner's or something and have all these big blockbuster streaming movies to pull in more subscribers. Maybe Star Trek would be one of those that could pull that off. We'll have to see. There's just other issues where, like, we had the Noah Hawley movie that was making a lot of headway there. I was kind of excited about the prospect of him doing this. And it sounds as if maybe his storyline kind of dealt with a pandemic of sorts. And it's like, is that really the kind of movie that we want to watch? And I get it. Like, I don't know if I really want to see people in film, you know, dealing with pandemics all the time at this point. So it really did fall victim to a whole bunch of different factors. I still contend the best thing to do is make that Quentin Tarantino movie. He doesn't need to direct it, but if you got his name attached to the story, that's good for your marketing. You don't need to spend $200 million on it. So I think that could be a lot of fun.
Whatever they do, I think it has to be something that draws in the bigger audience again, because that's something that I think they lost a little bit when we did Beyond. We need to get back to that. I think 2009 was a step in the right direction. It's just that it didn't have a lot of follow through. It took forever to get Star Trek Into Darkness. So you lost a lot of momentum. I think whatever they put out, it's got to be something that gets, you know, curious new viewers in to watch it, that then they can jump into that universe. And I hope that the Tarantino one could be that. Like, it seems kind of interesting and, you know, seems to involve the Kelvinverse crew. And I think the Kelvinverse crew could work. Chris Pine has a pretty good, you know, stature at this point. Wonder Woman 84 is coming out soon. People really like him a lot. So it makes sense to me to invest in that. But let's just say, for example, the Tarantino one doesn't happen. Say none of these happen, you know, any of these three projects that were happening. And they want to start from scratch and put together a Star Trek movie that's going to grab new people. What do you think they have to do? What kind of movie does it have to be, do you think, to grab maybe Star Trek fans as well as people that might jump over to their streaming shows?
Do you mean kind of thematically or from like kind of bringing back the Kelvinverse crew? You know, like I'll approach your question from two perspectives here. You have to bring back the Kelvinverse crew. If you want it to be success marketing wise, this is already a recognizable crew. I think it's going to be far more difficult to try to market something brand new and draw brand new audiences in solely with the word Star Trek in it. As for what kind of adventure to pull people in, I don't even know if that's for me to say. Like, I just think the reasons why we see a lot of these big kind of sci-fi franchises take off, look at Guardians of the Galaxy. People were pulled in for, I don't know, the character moments, the wacky fun. Do we want Star Trek to just try to copy what others have done, or do we want them to go and try to do something original on its own? I'm not saying you have to remake, you know, the motion picture and make it a contemplative sort of adventure, but I think that they should try to embrace what makes Star Trek great, which is, I think ultimately, the franchise is about communication and people coming together and understanding each other in different ways. And if I think that's a story that would be ripe for picking, especially in this day and age. But Cam, I think the earliest we see a Star Trek movie, it's going to be what, like a 6 or 7 year gap between Beyond and whatever comes next? That is just, That is poor, poor management on Paramount's part.
It really is. It's so weird because you would have thought when 2009 was such a big hit, they would have said, okay, we've got something, but they wanted to wait for Abrams for Into Darkness. But it really does feel like a ball dropped at a time where pretty much no other studio was dropping the ball on franchises.
Paramount is kind of a joke at times. Kim, do you have an idea for a Star Trek movie?
Well, it's interesting because I'm wondering, in a world like, say, the Kelvinverse crew, they can't get them back. Like, say they want to start with something else. It's a question of, is it even possible to do a Star Trek film with new characters that would pull people in? I think, you know, Guardians is a good example you brought up, because I think the thing about Guardians was it had its own unique vibe and tone that felt different to people. And I think that whether they went for that Kelvinverse energy, which also achieved that, or in a slightly different direction, I think they have to create something that has an energy that feels unique, but ultimately it all comes down to characters. Do you think it's possible to do a Star Trek film that would draw in people that aren't Star Trek fans with new characters versus rebooted versions of Kirk and Spock or a next gen thing?
I think it's possible. You have to market it in a way. You have to find like a hook. I think there needs to just be like an easy to digest hook behind this movie and justify why people would want to spend their money to go in theaters and see this. The thing is, we both liked Beyond. We don't know what the hook was to that movie, though. And at least with Star Trek Into Darkness, that was the highest grossing Star Trek film of all time. There was a hook in there. Speak of it as you will about the content, but there was an obvious hook. With 2009, there was an obvious hook. They were rebooting Star Trek, and Beyond just didn't have that hook. You know, it was just like, why are you asking people to come into the movie theaters if all it looks like it's going to be is just like one more adventure with the crew? And I don't know, they happen to be stranded on an alien planet. You need to do something more.
And if you look at the old movies too, you know, you look at Wrath of Khan, you look at Star Trek IV, The Voyage Home. Those are ones the mainstream viewers did enjoy a lot. Like, they tended to score very well with them because they were somewhat, I don't want it to say simple in a, you know, in a negative way, but they were simple stories to understand that people could get on board with and then really attach themselves to the character motivations, or in the case of Star Trek IV, the character comedy. And I think that will really pull people in if you find a story that's very well fashioned, but relatively easy to understand, and you just fill it out with characters people can connect with. I think that's a huge part of it, but it is kind of that lightning in a bottle. You know, there's so many movies made every year. Why aren't all of them, you know, massive, you know, it smashes across the board? Why don't they all have amazing characters? It's just like some people can just figure it out. Marvel is on a streak right now, being able to figure it out time and time again. What kind of characters are going to pull people in? Star Wars has been up and down. You know, the Solo film didn't do very well and didn't grab people, but they seem to be on an upswing with Mandalorian. I think Star Trek needs to do that. If it were to do a new film, you know, with new characters, I think they need to figure out why these characters are special and why they, you know, why an audience wants to, you know, hang out with them in a world where they have endless options for franchises and genre adventures.
Yeah. Cam, another thing that 2020 took away from us, though, was the convention experience. The big Star Trek Las Vegas convention was canceled for understandable reasons. That was the first time in, I think, like 6 or 7 years for you, and then 5 or 6 years for me. It was a bummer. It's such a great opportunity to get together with the Star Trek community, rub elbows with the stars, and honestly just have fun with friends that you only get to see like once a year in person. So I'm hopeful that I can get vaccinated in time for August 2021 and relive the adventures that we usually have at the conventions every year.
Yeah, it's actually weird too. I think it was the first time in just about a decade I hadn't been to a Star Trek con, because we had the two Vancouver ones I attended in the 2 years before I started going to Las Vegas. So it was like, this was the first summer where I didn't go to a Star Trek con since 2010, which is kind of crazy, actually. But it was a bummer because it is such an event for us, and not just in terms of going to see the actors we see on the Star Trek shows or the writers or the or what have you, but just getting to hang out with the Star Trek community, getting to wander those halls, getting to go to the vendors room and take in the atmosphere. That's something I've become somewhat addicted to over the years. It's just the atmosphere of the Star Trek cons, and it's something I very much rely on every year, and I missed it a lot.
What do you think the future of conventions will be post-pandemic? Do you think that they are going to be able to be revived, go back to their former glory? I just wonder if a lot of people are just going to be desperate to get out of the house after being cooped up for so long. I think that there could be kind of a resurgence and a revival of conventions experiences moving forward.
In some ways, this kind of ties into the whole idea of will people go back to movie theaters? And I do think these big crowd activities are going to draw people back. I think concerts, I think conventions, no one wants to sit at home forever. I know that they say, well, people are used to it now. They get their entertainment at home. But ultimately, I think a lot of people want to get back to a life where they have things to look forward to and events to talk to their friends about and to go and meet new friends. So I do think the conventions will be back, but they'll be about one of the last things I think back. And I'm optimistic that we will get to go to a Star Trek con this summer, but I'm also not 100% confident in it.
You know, I'm very concerned about, say, concerts. Like, there's a lot of festivals, like, scheduled to go on this summer. I think they're very, very optimistic that that will follow through. And if that's the case, though, I think it would be difficult to assume then that conventions will be easy to follow through with as well. Just think about the logistics involved. Like, we're still going to need to be wearing masks and everything. You know, even if you're vaccinated, there's a possibility that you could spread it to other people as of this recording. I don't know. Science might dispute that soon enough. So it's tough. Like you said, Cam, there's no guarantee, and it would be a bummer if it was yet another year in a row in which we could not attend.
Yeah, and Tyler and I kind of have a back-to-back scenario coming up where there's actually a big sci-fi con scheduled for Vancouver shortly before the Las Vegas Star Trek convention. Or the new name. What is the new name of it, Tyler?
Is it the Continuing Voyages?
I think so. The 55-year voyage or something like that?
Oh, yeah. I think it's like the 55-year voyage. It doesn't. The fact that it doesn't really roll off our tongues like that tells you maybe they have to work on the marketing just a little bit over at Creation Entertainment.
Right. But anyways, yeah, there's a big sci-fi con in Vancouver shortly before, and a lot of Discovery Picard guests are going to be there. It really is going to be a pretty big deal. And so even if there was issues with going to another country for Vegas, we have one in our own backyard. And I don't even know if that may happen. Like, there's real question marks around that as well.
Yeah, I would say that Vancouver and British Columbia, they've been rather risk averse to holding events. And I think that might be a tough go. To get that convention here in Vancouver in time for July.
Yeah, because you're talking about a lot of stars coming across the border too, and I don't know how that's going to work really right now with the way that BC is looking. So.
Well, pretty soon, like, we'll start getting these vaccine passports, you know, that so you can prove that you've been vaccinated if you want to visit another country. It's just a matter about, like, when we can achieve herd immunity. Canada's plan is to have every single Canadian that wants a vaccine to have one by September of 2021. So July might be close enough in which it could be safe. But I think the plan is, what, like 3 million, maybe 4 million Canadians vaccinated by end of March. So that's a very short period of time to get another like 30 million people vaccinated, right?
Yeah, it is fairly short.
All right. Well, Cam, before we jump over to our best of clips, our favorite clips of the year, I don't know, are there any favorite podcast episodes that we've done in Subspace these past 12 months that jumped out to you?
Yeah, it was kind of a weird year, right? Like, when you look back at some of the years we've done podcasts, we've had some amazing, like, big guest episodes and all that stuff to really draw attention to. This was just kind of a weird transition year where we were dealing with the pandemic and remote recording. And so it didn't have like kind of those big guest episodes, and hopefully one day we can get back to those. But there were some episodes that really were, I think, special that I really did enjoy a lot. And when we cover so much new Star Trek on the air, often those episodes kind of just fall by the wayside for me. I tend to not look at those as closely because it's kind of like, oh yeah, we talked about that episode of Discovery that week. There were some other interesting ones that we did. Like, I was a big fan of the episode we did, it was number 291 of Best Character Showcase episodes, where we went through the franchise and determined what was the best episode for each character. And I really enjoy experiments like this where we get to sit down and actually dig through mountains of episodes to determine what the character's best episode is. I thought that was a lot of fun.
I think Travis Mayweather was ill-served by that exercise on our part, but it really wasn't our fault. It's the writer's fault.
That's right. What about you?
What I really liked, I liked exploring Star Trek's origin stories in which we were trying to find a way in which we could kind of figure out, okay, there's been flashback episodes, but how do they reveal something about our characters? And getting to rewatch an episode like First Flight from Enterprise, that's fun. You know, like I like those kinds of moments for us to pick out episodes that you don't usually get, you know, picked apart by us and, you know, dig into them. So that was a good one for us to do.
Yeah, that was a really fun episode as well. Anything where I get to kind of brainstorm and look at past episodes is always fun for me. Like, I really do like going back and watching old episodes of Star Trek for research for this show. One I thought that was actually a really fun one to do, and I think was based somewhat in the issues we had with Picard, was episode 303, How to Fix Star Trek, where we went in and tried to be very proactive and positive about ways to look at this franchise that we could adjust it and perhaps bring it up to that upper tier that it deserves to be on, and how some episodes don't work and how we would fix them. That sort of thing. I thought that was a lot of fun, and it avoided the kind of thing that would annoy me where it's like, you know, our solution is fire Alex Kurtzman. Like, that's not the stuff I enjoy. The stuff I enjoy is where we can look at an actual story and say, okay, what's the issue? How could we fix this to maybe get more emotion out of it, for example?
Are you saying you're not interested in being one of those toxic fans, Cam?
No. I had to give that up after my Twilight YouTube videos.
Fair enough. Okay. One last one that I'll share here is episode that we did called You're Not the Captain, in which we took a look at some of those ancillary, well, not ancillary characters, but more of the other characters that don't usually get to sit in the captain's seat. You know, maybe when Jadzia Dax or Beverly Crusher get to take command. And those kind of moments really show the leadership skills of characters that if you're not a Picard, if you're not a Major Kira, maybe you don't always get that moment to shine as the other ones would.
Yeah, it's funny because we often get asked by friends, how do you guys come up with new topics to talk about? And this far into the show, it is fun when we latch on to one like that, where you could have easily thought that topic up, you know, in the first 10 episodes, but it had never occurred to us. And it was a really fun episode to do.
I'm sure there's some listeners that have looked at our episode topics and have thought that, oh yeah, these guys are really scraping at the bottom of the barrel at this point. But I'll take any praise that I can get when we've come up with like 300 episode ideas so far, and we still have a bunch banked in time for 2021. So we'll keep at it.
It is pretty funny, though, that the other characters taking the captain's seat arrived years after Irish stereotypes in Star Trek.
Yeah. Cam, I do recall that was your pitch, was it not? The Irish stereotypes in Star Trek?
I think I jokingly pitched it as a St. Patrick's Day episode, and we laughed about it so hard that at a certain point it just became a reality.
Yeah. Look, people, Star Trek has a weird obsession with Irish people. It's something.
Yep, it is. Yeah.
All right, well, Cam, why don't we go into our favorite moments of 2021? I think we give everybody this, you know, disclaimer. I don't know if these are the most profound clips of ours, but it's usually just us amusing ourselves, which is, you know, what we like doing on this show all the time. So we've got a whole bunch to share. And why don't we kick it off with something that probably got a lot more debate out of us than most things did on Star Trek Picard. But this was a very familiar Commodore who was featured throughout the run of Star Trek Picard. And there's something that we just could not help but notice about one Commodore O.
Yeah, what did you make of the whole this Vulcan Commodore showing up with Ray-Bans? I mean, you kind of acknowledged it off the top and just now.
I thought it was an amazing thing because I've never seen anything like that in Star Trek before. Like, we all looked at it. we all paused and we all started laughing because it looks so bizarre. It'd be like, what if we saw like the same Commodore wearing a jester's hat instead?
Yeah, right.
It seemed something like just so out there like that.
Or it's almost even like, say, Spock in like a headband in Star Trek IV. We were like, this just does not look right. I couldn't tell, though, if the show thought it was funny.
I wasn't sure.
Because I thought it was funny.
Yeah.
But why is she wearing sunglasses? Like, that's the question. Why is she wearing sunglasses?
She's undercover.
Okay. She doesn't want anyone to recognize her in her Commodore uniform.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I don't know.
It could be the actress. It could be just be something as simple as that. Don't you
like
think
she has, like, light sensitivity?
Yeah, which Terry Farrell had that light sensitivity.
True.
So if you watch an episode like Let He Who's Without Sin, like, she had a very difficult time filming that because her skin is so sensitive to the sun.
Wasn't there an episode they actually wrote her out of because of the sun? I can't remember.
Talking about Jake Sisko?
No, it was Terry Farrell was supposed to be in a, like a kind of a well-known DS9 episode, but they ended up taking her out because of the light issues.
Mm.
I can't remember what it was, though. But anyways.
So a situation like this, why not give her sunglasses shaped like Geordi LaForge's visor or something? Like, that would be kind of...
Yeah.
This just looked like something they picked out of the sunglasses hut, like down the street. Like,
yeah.
It threw me off a little bit.
Maybe that's her 20th century fetish. Is Ray-Bans.
That would be amazing.
Well, Cam, did you go out and buy sunglasses right after watching that episode?
I did not, but I will say, it's funny. You always, I think, as a show nowadays, or any sort of film property or TV property, you want to have like a meme moment, right? Like a moment that people, you know, start making fun of or having jokes about and referencing online. I feel like this was Picard's.
Yeah, you know, it certainly turned to a meme moment for our WhatsApp group in which I think what happened is I took a photo of O wearing the sunglasses and I put a caption underneath it and it just said, deal with it. And then all of our friends started joining in with other Star Trek characters wearing eyewear. And there's a lot of eyewear in Star Trek, much more than I ever anticipated. And everybody just kept captioning it with deal with it. And that really became our meme moment in our WhatsApp group.
One of the highlights of 2020 for those involved.
Definitely one of the highlights for Star Trek Picard.
That's right. Now, you know, talking about aliens adopting some interesting human customs, let's look at an episode we did on, it was tackling a Lower Decks episode, but we posed the question of what would happen with a reimagined Cardassians?
So to me, the Cardassians feel like they're about due for a rebirth as well.
Lower Decks could have a lot of fun reviving those first uniforms that the Cardassians were wearing in the TNG episode, The Wounded, in which they look like milk jugs that they were walking around in. Like, that could be like kind of like a fun joke they could play around with. I also really, much like Odo's Cardassian neck trick that we never got to see, I really want to see whatever this Cardassian dance that Freeman learned. I want that to be her talent show debut someday on the Cerritos Bridge.
That did make me laugh because when I think of dancing, Cardassians feel like the last alien species that would be dancing.
What would be a Cardassian dance in your mind? But like, what's the closest like human dance that the Cardassians would employ?
Okay, so the way it was presented on the show, you got the sense it was fairly intricate. Like, it was not a basic sway, for example, because she said she'd learn the dance. So like, in my mind, I go, oh, it's just a very slight swaying back and forth. But that is not the case. So, like, what is a Cardassian-style dance? Like, I could see something, you know, that classic, I don't even know if it's really done in real life versus just in pop culture, but that Russian dance where they squat low to the ground and kick their legs in the air?
Yeah.
Something like that. I could see something
that
like
that. That would be amazing. Okay. I can't think of anything better than that, so... Cam, have you ever done that dance before?
Probably jokingly, yes.
Imitating the Fonz. He's done that dance, I think.
Well, Cam, I'd say, that is one of the greatest things to ever picture in my head. There's some other great things that we got to discover in Star Trek Discovery, And one of the characters as featured in the second episode's Far From Home really illuminated that for us. And I think we had a lot of fun discussing that too.
I think Guide to the Galaxy, was book much help to Burnham when she asked the basic questions like what's the burn and what happened to the Federation?
I don't know.
Yeah. Although I do appreciate that Zara said the burn is the greatest thing that happened to me. I was like, well, how old are you, dude, if the burn happened like 100 years ago?
Yeah, no kidding. That would, like, I'm trying to think of what's an example we would give. Like,
okay, like the Napoleonic Wars were the greatest thing that ever happened to me.
Settling the frontier was the greatest thing that ever happened to me. Like, yeah, what? Yeah. It is a very strange thing to say, actually, now that you think about it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So weird. The Industrial Revolution. That was my time.
You know, the discovery of penicillin. So glad that happened to me.
Tyler, I'm still waiting for the burn to be the greatest thing to ever happen to me. But you know what? While I'm waiting for that, let's look at another clip. We had a lot of debate pre-Picard about whether Q could factor into this series. And I think we came up with an idea that was pretty good.
If they really wanted to surprise you, they should just open up the season premiere with the series premiere with John DeLancey. He's like, let me tell you a story about my friend Picard, eh?
And he like opens a giant book.
And then there's... the camera zooms into the book and it fades into outer space. Like, no. It sideswipes into outer space.
And then the series ends with him closing the book and going, but that's a story for a different time.
Cam, I think we've just fixed Star Trek Picard. Like, I don't know, CBS. Like, these ideas are out there for free. Just
and he
saying.
Puts the book back on the shelf. And in the, like, right next to that one is a book that says Chakotay on it.
And then we pull back from the bookshelf and we see it's Patrick Stewart doing his one man A Christmas Carol show. And he's like, wow.
It wasn't the only good idea we had, Cam. And in fact, there's a bit of a prediction about Star Trek Picard that we really did not realize would come to fruition.
Yeah. This is what we ended up with. I don't know. Like, if I was going to get a Mars Attack story, you know, not, not starring Jack Nicholson, of course. You know, it would be great at the end where, like, one of the girls turned to the other and said, can't we all just get along?
Then Tom Jones starts up. It's not unusual.
Yeah, instead of David Bowie, it should have been Tom Jones, like, a cover the entire time. Okay. I think we've perfected Children of Mars, Cam. Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
And the whole time you see the little ships, like, attacking, all you hear is, ack, 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 ack.
I was wondering why there's all those burning cows, like, wandering through the background. Like, that was a bizarre scene, too. All makes sense
Did
now.
Did Picard play dual roles? One is Picard, one is, like, a gambler in Las Vegas?
It makes sense to me. Yeah. No, a gambler in the south of France, like Monte Carlo, right?
Right, yeah. Right.
But he's got, like, the huge, like, thick French accent.
Right.
And a goatee. So, okay. We've perfected Children of Mars.
Yeah, Cam, I wish I never made any predictions about one Patrick Stewart speaking in a French accent through extended periods of Star Trek Picard, but lo and behold, I guess I just have that gift.
Isn't that insane that that actually happened?
I cannot believe it. Like, that Stardust City Rag goes down as all-time one of the worst episodes of Star Trek for me, just unpleasant, but I guess if you're Patrick Stewart, you want to stretch yourself with acting every once in a while.
Was that the low point of Star Trek this year?
That episode? Yes. But moment? No, I still... I knew I was going to hate that episode as soon as we were watching Ichab get tortured to death.
Right, right. Yeah. Okay, well, fair enough.
Well, speaking of torture, Cam, we certainly know that when it came to parenting, Worf certainly considered that to be a torture. I think we can agree he was not a great father, but I think we had an interesting discussion about whether or not, you know, Alexander would ever be able to make his father proud.
Do you think if Alexander went to art school, Worf would care?
No, I think Worf, actually, I think he would care, and it would just be one more thing he could add to his list about why his son is a disappointment.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah. He was even disappointed that Alexander joined the Klingon Imperial Defense Force. Like, you just know winning with that guy.
Yeah, it's like, what kind of vocation in life does he have to please his father other than, like, you know, high-ranking Starfleet or Klingon warrior of some sort? Is there any other job that would please Worf?
I've got an idea. I don't know if you're with me, but what if Alexander joined the diplomatic corps? You know, like, he'd be doing what his mother did, and later on in life, what Worf did, albeit seemingly quite briefly, based on the time difference between What You Leave Behind and Star Trek Nemesis.
Yeah, it's possible. It's possible. I feel like it's the type of diplomat he is, though, that would win Worf's respect. I don't think just because he's a diplomat, Worf's like, oh, awesome job, you rock.
I think, okay, like, Alexander could be a great artist, and Worf wouldn't care, but I bet if Alexander was a great diplomat, Worf would legit respect that.
Right.
Yeah.
Alexander Art School, coming to CBS All Access / I guess, what is it? Paramount Plus, sometime in the future. I can't wait for it. But let's talk about another character who has his fair share of fans and detractors, and that's Neelix. And the episode Fair Trade, we did an episode called Things in Star Trek That Don't Make Sense. Also a fun episode, actually. And we were talking about mapping and how the universe is sort of explained to the audience in Star Trek. And that kind of sent us down an interesting path about the episode Fair Trade. So listen in on that one.
It just doesn't make sense, though. Like, space is in three dimensions. And I think that it's also much easier to grasp the close proximity of places like Earth and Kronos, Romulus, if it's all kind of overlapping, you know, like, well, one star system could be above the other and then perpendicular to another. So maybe think of it as like candies inside of a cake that's been baked, you know, and like the candies represent star systems. And maybe an M&M is aligned with a Federation, and we have a gumdrop aligned with Kronos, and they don't all have to be, you know, two-dimensionally aligned. They can, like, hover over each other or underneath each other. I think that actually explains a lot about the mechanics of just space travel and how all these distances seem to be, well, not as distant as we might think.
Yeah, for sure. That's a delicious metaphor you made.
I'm hungry. That's probably why I made that.
But, there's, of course, that episode Fair Trade where Neelix has to get the map, right?
Yeah.
Does that map even make sense that he has to get? It was on paper, wasn't it? Wasn't it like a scroll?
Oh, I thought it was like a isolinear chip or something.
Okay,
like that.
I'm misremembering. I think I prefer to remember it as a scroll.
Okay. That'd be amazing. And like whenever he opened it up, somebody had to like toot on a horn and like the scroll comes down.
Well, Cam, that was certainly amusing. Other things that are amusing is when I humiliate myself. And this following clip got a good laugh at the time out of us. And our friends were quick to mock me after realizing that I am a bit of a dope.
We are here this week to talk about the latest episode of Star Trek Discovery, Die Trying.
I kept waiting for like a 50 Cent sort of cameo, but instead we just got David Cronenberg.
Well, David Cronenberg showed up and he was like, go, go.
What?
In the club, man. I need the music to accompany me. Otherwise, I'm just saying randomly go, which does not communicate well on a podcast.
I get it. No, I get it now. Go, Charlotte. It's your birthday.
Charlotte. Go. Yeah. Charlotte.
Yeah, that's how those are the lyrics.
Let's go, Shorty.
Go, Shorty. Oh.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, actually, that makes way more sense. I've spent 20 years singing along to this song going, go Charlotte. What a revelation. And all of our listeners were here to witness it.
That's right.
Okay.
So, I know there's a lot of songs where people don't get the lyrics right. They become like a whole, you know, unintentionally viral thing of people getting the lyrics wrong. I don't think that was ever one of them.
Cam, earnest question for you. Are you always going to hear those 50 Cent lyrics in your head as Go Charlotte moving forward?
Well, you think about it. That's a song that's been in the pop culture sphere forever now. Like it feels like it's always been there. It's eternally been in my life. But I feel like now I have a new dimension to add to that song I did not have up until 2020. So I guess I have to thank you for that.
Well, you know, it's something that's out there. And I guess there are other things that are out there as illustrated in Star Trek, the motion picture.
They really come to life, or at least Kirk does, you know, beyond that majestic, you know, viewing of the refit Enterprise. Mm-hmm. Kirk really seems to come to life when Bones beams aboard the ship. We get Disco McCoy greeting him and complaining about being conscripted for Starfleet once again. You know, that's where, for the first time, we see the energy of Kirk from the 1960s come alive once again.
He has a line that is so amazing where he just goes, "Bones, there's a thing out there." And I'm like, that is a weird line to see in a meditative like sci-fi film. There's a thing out there.
Well, Cam, always fun to catch up with crew of the 1701. And in one particular episode earlier this year, we finally got confirmation that Strange New Worlds is going to come, and we'll get kind of the origin stories more of Pike, Number One, and Spock. And we actually kind of thought about something, had a bit of a debate about what the, you know, best and worst names for Star Trek series are throughout this entire franchise.
You know, pop quiz for you, just before I lose my train of thought here. But what series do you think has the best name for a series? And which series do you think has the worst name for a series?
Oh, that's excellent. That's an excellent question. I would say let's start with the best. I think Voyager is actually a really good title.
Yeah, I agree. Pretty
good. That one I really like because it does feel very like adventurous. I think actually Discovery is a pretty good title.
My pick is Discovery, just for the record.
Yeah, like I can't say that Discovery, that title, has lived up to what the show is. I think the show has become its own unique animal that maybe doesn't really deserve the title Discovery.
Maybe it's inner Discovery, Cam.
Well, it seems to be at this point. Yeah. And I mean, you really can't also overlook the original Star Trek. Which just that those two words together, it's just that the fact is that was 50 plus years ago, and we've now added the second, you know, or the third words and fourth words onto there that make it sound extra cool. So, I mean, you know, obviously the original, but Voyager is the one I would have gone with.
A couple of contenders for the worst, because I think there's a bit of a mixed bag of episode titles out there, but what's your pick, sir?
The worst, I think I would probably say, and this is going to be heresy for some people, but I think The Next Generation, I just don't know that it was even that original at the time.
It's silly sounding as well, isn't it?
Yeah, and I have to imagine there's probably sequels to movies around this point in time that also used The Next Generation in their titles, and it was kind of just like a buzz term for like...
Sounds very 80s.
It does, and it kind of just means like recast everyone and we can continue the story. Yeah. And obviously TNG became so much more than just what its title would indicate. It really did become a whole other adventure unto itself. But as a title, it's kind of like, I guess. It sounds very it sounds kind of cash in, honestly.
Yeah, for me, I would give it to Next Generation, but I think a very close runner-up would be Picard. I think it actually would have been just a much stronger title if Star Trek wasn't in the name, if they just called it Picard rather than Star Trek, Picard. It's a bit of a weird one.
Yeah. And I mean, we did talk a lot about that before that show was officially given a title. I just think they always wanted that branding in there of the, you know, the two words Star Trek. It's fine. I mean,
they didn't want to repeat what they did with Enterprise and then having to revert to Star Trek Enterprise halfway through the series.
Yeah. Like, but even the title Star Trek Picard or just Picard, it doesn't give you a lot of feeling of mystery that I think the other ones do. Even Deep Space Nine, before you've seen that show, you're like, what is Deep Space Nine? When I hear Picard,
what happened to Deep Space 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8? That's
exactly
the mystery I have now.
Exactly. And just the deep space aspect is very like haunting and mysterious. Whereas I hear Picard, I go, cool, more Picard.
Now, Tyler, I have a question for you. Where does Star Trek Prodigy rank in the Star Trek title, you know, grading system?
I think maybe last, if I'm being honest. Prodigy.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What about you?
It's further down. I don't know that it's the worst. I feel like TNG, you know, Next Generation is still pretty clunky. Prodigy might be one above that, but it's still not a great title.
Yeah. Deep Space Nine, I like it, but I'm kind of surprised that they got the network suits to sign off on that.
I know. What a great time to be alive, huh?
Yeah. Speaking of a great time to be alive, that's one Mr. Jonathan Frakes, who was featured in pretty much everything that had to do with Star Trek all of 2020. Cam, we collected a couple fun moments from Star Trek Discovery in which we couldn't help but just go back and do a little bit of Frakes and Riker talk.
Didn't they say, like, no human has ever successfully hosted a symbiont?
Successfully, because we do know that Riker temporarily was a host in... Yeah. I think it was just called The Host, right? From TNG?
Correct, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So I can buy that, you know.
Wouldn't you have loved it if they were like, only one man has ever hosted a symbiont?
And that's when we finally get the long-awaited Jonathan Frakes cameo in Star Trek Discovery.
He's like bathing in one of the pools.
He emerges like Phoebe Cates.
in Fast Times at Ridgemont High?
Yeah, yeah.
I don't want to know who the Judge Reinhold in this situation is, thanks.
Okay, fair enough. Cam, has one Lieutenant Kayla Detmer been cured of PTSD?
One would seem to think so, yeah.
All it takes is exposing herself to more trauma that would induce anxiety in anyone else?
You know what? I agree with you. Psychologically, this made no sense for this character whatsoever. But I was excited to see her get to do cool things because we've seen, like, she is the pilot of the ship, and so many other characters in other shows that were, you know, pilots got to have these, like, really awesome hotshot kind of Top Gun moments, and we got to see Detmer have hers, hopefully the first of a few to come, and I actually enjoyed it, even if the kind of the, I don't know, the CG effects never grabbed me as much as practical stuff, but it was fun to see at least.
Do you think when she went to manual steering and she got the joysticks, she ran over to one Jonathan Frakes and was like, dude, okay, I know you totally had that manual steering column back in Star Trek Insurrection. Show me your ways. How do I handle these bad boys?
I like to think Frakes just stepped in and was like, look, I am the expert at manual steering. I need everyone to know that on set. I'm actually the manual steering consultant on this show as well.
You know what? I realized that we never actually got to see like a wide shot of her handling the joysticks. They're all close-ups and her hands looked exceptionally big and hairy when they had the close-ups of her on the joysticks.
So. And she kept yelling yee-haw in a very masculine voice.
Yeah, yeah. It was a very confusing moment in this episode, Cam.
With the Adira stuff, I really enjoyed the scene where we had Stamets and Adira playing music together. And I would have loved, you know, in a show that just breathed a little more. I mean, this episode was like 47 minutes. Why not tack on two more minutes and just let that music kind of play the way we did in like an episode like Lessons from TNG?
Well, Cam, you know who directed this one?
Yes, I do. Jonathan Frakes.
It would have been great if one Riker made a cameo bringing in his trombone to rock out with them.
But it's just Jonathan Frakes in his street clothes.
Yeah, no explanation either. Just that the camera kind of swerves and you can even see the guy holding the boom mic.
I am in favor of this 100%.
Okay. I like how we've been writing in all these Jonathan Frakes cameos throughout the run of season 3 of Star Trek Discovery.
He's the new Hitchcock of Star Trek.
I like, yeah. We can see his silhouettes in moments we would not expect.
I just want to apologize to all the listeners for not scoring those clips with a trombone. That would have been amazing.
Well, maybe next year, Cam. We can do a remix of our theme music. All trombones.
All trombones. Yeah, that would be amazing. We had Ben Yong, fallen co-host Benjamin Yong, perform the Inner Light song with a recorder once. And it would be amazing to do a trombone rendition of the subspace theme.
Or you get a trombone rendition of the Inner Light song.
Either way, I'm not picky. Anything with a trombone, bring it on.
All right. Well, Cam, I think you have like another, perhaps a little bit of surprise cooked up for listeners, something that you always like to share. Maybe I'll let you lead into that as well.
Yeah, you were talking when we introduced the Ghost Charlotte clip about the fun of looking like a dope. And, well, as with every year, you know, at the end of the year, it's time to look back on those moments of subspace that maybe we're also not that proud of, the moments that maybe didn't quite make the air. And so this is the moment where you just kind of open Pandora's box and let them all out. You also have this kind of contentiation. Bah. You kind of have this also, this contentious. Hold on. You kind of have this also very tense relationship with Janeway that's paid off in this episode. You have him getting demoted.
It gets into kind of the nitty-gritty of Vulcan culture and Vulcan politics. It puts Archer in a very interesting position of having to carry the Katra of Surok, of all people, excuse me. I cannot carry the Katra. One second.
I'm Cam Smith, and joining me on the dream. I'm Cam Smith, and joining me on the Dream Bridge.
Oh, sorry. Take it again.
Okay.
Yeah, so ultimately, like, we get to the Hoshi reveal, which, Cam...
One of the great scenes in Enterprise.
Do you want to tell the story that's how we celebrated that reveal when we were at a Star Trek convention back, I think, in 2017 at the All Trek Mind, right?
One Trek Mind,
yeah.
What was it?
Hoshi. Best Mirror Universe. You can find me at Reportin. That's ORPORT. T is in Toby Targ. ON.
Wait, did you say ORP?
Did I misspell my name?
Yeah. You said it's ORPORT.
Okay. Save that for the bloopers. Okay. 1, 2, 3. And you can find me at Reportin. I can't remember how to spell it. Okay. I got it.
I'm Cam Smith, and joining me on the bridge.
Oh, sorry, Cam. That was just me. I had my mic off. It was on mute as we're doing this Zoom chat. It seems to be happening for a lot of people that are doing these chats on Zoom. But apologies. Mic on mute. I'll figure out next time, sir.
Wait, is this part of a shtick, or are we redoing it?
That's part of a shtick.
You totally lost me there. Okay.
I'm not sure how I feel yet because I haven't seen it executed, but the fact that she's carrying this the symbiont. Oh, God.
Symbiont.
She's carrying this symbiont. Oh, my God. Symbiont. Sounded out slower for me here.
Symbiont.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
My vote has to go to Wave of the Warrior. I love First Contact. It's such a great episode. But Cam, are we going to have to send this to the computer once again?
I think so. And I'll take, I guess, odds for First Contact.
Odds for First Contact. I'm going to roll again. Oh, shit, man. I'll edit for that for children.
Yeah.
Cam, if I was editing, I would have kept all of those moments in. Everyone.
I mean... The comedic value would have been a little higher for sure of these shows.
Yeah. Well, Cam, look, I think we had a blast of a year. We always like doing the best of episodes. And listeners, we've got big plans for 2021 as well. I alluded to some of them with we'll be doing rewatches of Picard, Discovery, and Lower Decks. I think we need enough space to actually have kind of a form like an opinion at a distance, and it'll give us perspective. I'm actually curious about rewatching Star Trek Picard and if watching it in binge mode actually kind of makes me appreciate what they're trying to accomplish, because what they were trying to accomplish, it went over my head, to say the least, at this point. And we're going to finish up the run of Discovery Season 3 very early, and then I think we're going to have a bit of a dry spell for content. Hopefully Star Trek Discovery premieres, they're filming it right now. Hopefully it premieres maybe by the fall. and maybe we get Lower Decks in the summer as well. But for, I don't know, maybe 6 months, it might just be us coming up with new episode ideas.
Which is totally cool with me. I mean, when does Prodigy, when is it roughly scheduled to air? Have they announced anything yet?
I don't think so. And I would be surprised if it airs this year, because I believe they have not really started animating that much of it. Like, I think they're actually still writing it at this point. So I think it's a ways away.
We could also have some short treks as well, though.
I would hope so. You know, like, if Discovery is on or filming right now, it would allow them to have, you know, those crews ready to do something fun. Picard's going to be filming soon. I would not expect Picard to premiere in the fall. My guess would be most likely early 2022. Sure, let's get us a short track. Those are always fun to dig into as well.
Now, they've released Star Trek Discovery Season 3 and then gone into shooting Season 4 fairly quickly. So we're going to have Discovery seasons fairly close together. Do you think we have a bit of a gap in Discovery when we have Picard coming out and Strange New Worlds and maybe Section 31?
Not necessarily, actually. Because the reason there was... the reason that they're shooting it so quickly after the premiere of Discovery Season 3 is because they had waited so long. Like, it was sitting there kind of on the shelf waiting to premiere, and I think CBS All Access was just trying to get it going. So, I think we'll wrap the season, and they'll try to continue with if the show gets picked up, they'll try to continue a season 4 filming at around a similar time this year. So yeah, I don't really expect a big gap for, I guess, season 5 of Star Trek Discovery if it gets the nod.
Right, right. Yeah, that's one thing I'm very optimistic about with Discovery, is that every season the show has kind of rebooted itself in some way. So even if I'm not a big fan of season 3, I'm very hopeful that when we get to season 4, that the nugget of what the season is about interests me more. Like, that's what I'm hoping for. This season, the whole Burn thing isn't really working for me, but hopefully whatever they do in season 4 does grab me. Hopefully the finale of season 3 grabs me too, because there's teases for where we're going. So I'm trying to be very optimistic that Discovery is going to get onto a path that it deserves, because I would love that Discovery belongs alongside, you know, on the shelf when I'm looking at my, you know, DVD shelves or Blu-ray shelves, and I'm seeing Voyager, you know, DS9. I want Discovery to belong with those shows, and I'm very hopeful they can get there. So, you know what? Season 4, bring it on.
Yeah. Bring it on, because we're not enjoying Season 3.
That's pretty much it. I don't know. Do you have any hope of these, like, last couple episodes of Discovery?
No. I feel what's going to happen is they're going to be jam-packed with all this exposition. They're going to try to resolve all this Burn stuff plus the Emerald Chain stuff. And I don't care about either one. And all I can hope for really are some cool character moments, but I also think that they're getting ready to give Saru the boot from the captain's chair and give it up to Burnham. I think that's what they're alluding to in the previous episode. And I don't really care for that. So I am, I have low expectations, which might just be the thing I need as a viewer.
I am a little concerned about the Saru thing. I am, though, genuinely curious what kind of big tease they work into the finale, because the previous two season finales, they ended with moments that had people talking, right? And so I am curious what they've got in store for us at the end of this upcoming finale.
Oh, maybe it is a bridge to the Mirror Universe, and all season 4 Cam takes place in the Mirror Universe.
Get out of my head. Okay, so I think on that note, our assignment is complete. If you enjoyed listening to this podcast, we want to hear from you. Jump on over to the Facebook page at facebook.com/subspacepod. Tyler, what are we doing next week?
Yeah, I guess we're going to come back. We'll do two back-to-back episode reviews of Star Trek Discovery. And then after that, it'll be the season finale that we'll have to review. So it'll be a busy kickoff to 2021.
Yeah, there's no quiet days in 2021 near the start, are there? Like, some years, it's kind of like, okay, well, let's just come up with a new episode topic. But we've actually got some new Star Trek content to launch us right into 2021. So hopefully it delivers, at least for those of you out there. So, yeah, we'll see. Okay, you can, of course, find us on the Twitter. I'm at Cam, V is in Vegas, please happen, Smith.
You can find me at Reportin, that's R-E-P, P as in Poe Charlotte, O-R-T-O-N.
Okay, so until next time, the arena is closed.
Transfer complete.